I have a friend who was missionary to Egypt for 6 years. I tell him he was missionary to Egypt for 4 years. He said I was missionary to Egypt for six. So we have this wonderful little repartee going. He's really right. He was a missionary to Egypt for 6 years. But he only spent 4 years in Egypt. But he can rightfully say he was a missionary to Egypt for 6 years because first 2 years he spent doing what? Learning the language. So the first thing a missionary does is to learn the language of the culture where God has sent them. Now, does anybody want to fight with this? But we are fighting with this. We are willful, stubborn. We sound like Voltaire. If you would speak with us, Voltaire said, speak with me, you first must learn my language. Now, I think the church has a language that must not be lost. And ultimately, people do need to learn to speak the language of the church. But the church is multilingual. And I want to introduce you to the language of the culture that we're in. You ready? All I'm going to do is have you watch those who have learned to speak it best. I tell my kids, actually I warn my kids, that every day they're going to be exposed to 3,500 sermons. On average, they're going to hear 3,500 sermons a day. People in the culture tell me, I've never heard a sermon. I go, every day you hear at least 3,000. That's the average number of advertising messages the average person is exposed to per day. Nobody's learned the language and culture better than these people who do commercials. And I also tell my kids that just know that every one of these messages, and I'm not one that says don't watch commercials. I tell my kids, I want you to watch them because if Michelangelo were alive today, he'd probably be doing commercials. This is the highest art form, perhaps, of our culture. This is where you get art, literature, everything together really quick. So honor them for what they are, but know that everyone is probably telling you, most likely, the gospel's wrong. The gospel's wrong. You want to be happy? Buy that refrigerator. You want to find the right mate? Drive that car. You want success in life? Do this. But let me introduce you to the language of the culture. Now, the first one we're going to do is, I'm going to do a couple of these. You can have bad Super Bowl games because there's another Super Bowl going on besides football. And people love to watch the Super Bowl now, not just for the football. By the way, the football is becoming so slow, it's losing my own kids. But if it weren't for a little epic app called Fantasy Football, they wouldn't be interested at all because it's so slow. But they do love the commercials. And here is the number one Super Bowl commercial of all time. You've probably seen it, but I just want to refresh your memory. And I'm going to have you look at two of them. This is the most famous one, but I also want you to see the one that won last year's Super Bowl. By all accounts, this is the best Super Bowl commercial ever. And when we watch it, I want you to notice something about it. So here we go. This is the language of the culture we live in, right here. Well, that's all right. Let's do this one. That's fine. This is the one that won last year's. That's all right, Alexander. Let's just stay with this.
This is the one that won last year's?
Yep. Okay. What'd you notice?
Relationships.
Touch.
Interaction of the atmosphere.
No words.
That way.
It's good.
Wordless.
Maybe emotional.
Sentimental. High EQ. Appeals right to the head, right?
No.
Right to the heart. Heavy. It's a story to a soundtrack. You got to have a soundtrack. But notice the very thing that they want you to buy is never a part of the commercial. Okay? Anybody who's selling anything in the world we live in today is not selling a product. They're selling a story that draws you into a relationship. They want you to engage with that story on an emotional level. Y'all hearing this? Now, the problem is, it's hard to hear this because this is exactly the opposite of how they taught us to communicate in seminary. Taught us to peel the head. You peel the emotions, you're being manipulative. Notice, intellectually, we could dazzle them, razzle, dazzle. But if we pull on the heartstrings, we're being manipulative. We're not being manipulative rationally if we razzle, dazzle them. Well, it is, but. And there's no words. Now, here's the number one Super Bowl commercial of all time. Y'all have seen this before, but just. It's always good to have a little refresher. It's the famous Darth Vader. Here we go. Last two are the newest, but this one is from a. Now you did see in that one what you're buying, but it wasn't featured. What was featured is the story. Again, soundtrack out of a soundtrack, no words. This one has a 3-minute version that is spectacular. So if you really want to see something that is incredible, a story in 3 minutes, I'm going to have you look at the 1-minute commercial, but. It's from a hotel. Shangri-La is the name of the hotel chain. But you would not know it if I told you that. But here is how the commercial starts. And they have no interest in you seeing the hotel, seeing the room, because anybody who's selling anything, again, is selling the story. Here it is. Thank you. Why didn't the church do that? Why did the church do that? See, we've got it when we're trying to sell a church, not sell a story. Now they use words here. And it doesn't mean you can't use words. They used words, but they used words to bring the story home. To embrace a stranger as one's own. It's in our nature. Less than 10 words. Powerful story. Grabs you. And you don't see a bed, you don't see a room, you don't see a building. You got a story. Now, this is the one that's most talked about. This got a Cannes Film Festival Award. Some say it's the best commercial ever made. I think that one was. But this is 2 minutes now. So this is a commercial that didn't debut at Super Bowl because it would have conflicted with what they are... their identity, with their campfire story, if you will. So it is a commercial that actually sells burritos, if you can believe it. But it's a commercial that you never see a burrito. And you never even see the logo of the company until the very, very end. They spent their money not on spending millions of dollars for a minute at the Super Bowl. They spent their money actually getting Willie Nelson to sing Coldplay. You can imagine. But they needed Willie Nelson because that kind of gave authenticity to the story. And you'll see what I mean in just a minute. Here it is. Just exploring it, unpacking it, the meaning of postmodern, all that stuff. But, you know, at the beginning, the pig walked away. At the end, the pig walked towards the family. I mean, it's just, you have to see it a couple times to see all this. But it amuses me because the end of the story is the same for the pig.
Yeah.
You know? Whichever way it looks. look at it. The pink is going down. But it feels a lot better than pink. So, but again, wordless. Now you got a few words at the end just to bring it home, but I wanted to drill this home with you all. This culture doesn't speak in words. This culture can't hear words unless they're telling a story. The lingua franca of this culture, and let me just put it out there, is story and image. The lingua franca of this culture is narrative and metaphor. I first put story and image together into one word, but it came out storage. So I said, okay, forget that one. So I put now narrative and metaphor into one word, narrator. Can you all say that? This culture, the language of this culture is narrator. Now, if you all aren't right now so excited you're jumping up and down, this is the mother tongue of Christianity. This is our mother tongue. See, we were educated away from our mother tongue in a Gutenberg culture. The modern world began with a 95-point sermon. As Luther nailed, some say mailed, actually German is posted, his 95 points. And if you notice, they begin to a little less pointy. You know, Edwards got down to 26 points, Wesley got down to 22 points, Finney got down to 12, Moody got down to 7, Sunday got down to 5, Graham got down to 3, Hayden Robinson says make a 1 point, just make it a big point. My wife says, your sermons are pointless. And I said, thank you. Because making points no longer makes points. This is a culture that doesn't think in points, doesn't hear in points. And we thought Jesus communicated like this. This is Jesus' sermon, right? Let me give you these seven habits of highly effective disciples. No. The ultimate, if you got to have an ultimate message. Now, the ultimate message, the medium and the message are one in Jesus. Okay? But the ultimate message for Jesus, if you got to pick one, is the kingdom. So you would think he would want his disciples to get this right. You'd think he'd want to be as clear as he possibly could be about this. Wouldn't you? It's all about the kingdom. Right? So he gives us a really good definition of the kingdom, right? Not. Andy Stanley and I got a little tiffed on Twitter a couple years ago because they had to go, the unpardonable sin for a preacher is to be unclear. He says you can be uncertain, but never be unclear. And I just tweeted back, yeah, Andy, that's so Jesus. Because after every Jesus sermon, the disciples looked at one another and said, that's the clearest thing I've ever seen. Now everything comes right together. The disciples looked at one another and said, what? See, Jesus preached for something more important than clarity. He wanted you to continue the conversation. So this is, what do you think he meant by that? I don't know. What do you think he meant by that? Well, I think he meant this. And then Jesus is listening to this, and he'll come in and steer it in another direction if it gets too far awry. But for Jesus, it's something more. Here's the best Jesus does for the kingdom. The kingdom of heaven is among you. The kingdom of heaven is within you. Or the rest we get is the kingdom. We get similitudes. Kingdom of heaven is like. 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 We are now back to the mother tongue. And we're so afraid. We're so afraid. I guarantee you, every one of your mission statements is words. Anybody got a mission image? Anybody got a mission story? You got words. So who are we speaking to? Ourselves. We aren't speaking to this culture in a way that they can hear us. this culture communicates in, what's the word?
Narrow
fours. Now, we spend a whole time, I don't want to do this, but Paul Ricoeur is an incredible linguistic philosopher, Roman Catholic, taught us basically the narratives and metaphors are the same thing. And that's why you can legitimately combine a narrative metaphor, narrow force. A narrative is an embellished, embroidered metaphor. A metaphor is a dense, distilled narrative. But the key is a metaphor. And this is where, there's a couple things where the whole narrative preaching went awry. And one is, narrative preaching was in the service of a principle and a proposition. It always ended in a principle proposition. Plus, the whole narrative preaching kind of movement within the whole arena of worship in the 70s and 80s went for 30 minutes. The only one that can preach a 30-minute narrative and get away with it is Fred Craddock. We do not have an attention span that can follow the narrative 30 minutes. It's back to Jesus. Jesus is never in any story for more than 2 to 3 minutes. Just like how you watch TV. You're in a narrative for 2 to 3 minutes, then you loop out of it and stack on top of it another one. You're in a narrative for 2 to 3 minutes, you loop out of it and stack on top of another. King of Heaven is like a lost coin, 2 to 3 minutes. Loop out of it, a lost sheep, 2 to 3 minutes. Greatest short story ever told, the lost son, 2 to 3 minutes. But it's built on a metaphor. And we've not known what to do with metaphor. Metaphors replace points. You don't lead people with points, you lead them with, if anything, narratives. But it's got to be built on a metaphor. Of course, your mind is made of metaphors. When you dream, you don't dream in words. You'll never have a dream of you reading, because your mind is not. Your mind is made of metaphors. You dream in metaphors. And that's why you want to do brain surgery, you want to do soul surgery on somebody, give them a new metaphor. Change your metaphor, change your world. This is the way in which we communicate. Let me just ask for comments, questions.
It really is a new paradigm. I remember in seminary, Tom Long, who's more narrative, preached a 15-minute sermon that most of my fellow students were disappointed. That's it. Because, you know, no preacher. And I thought it was one of the greatest sermons I'd ever heard, but our covenant group had a discussion afterwards whether it was the best or the worst sermon we heard all semester.
Yeah. What I say, though, is you can go on for hours if you keep. I mean, how many of you watch 24? You can't get more complex than 24. They have 30, 40 characters. But we can handle an immense amount of complexity as long as you keep looping in and out of storylines. You take one storyline, and the most you can do is like 13 minutes. But even then, you're pressing it. But you do 2 to 3 minutes, loop out of it, another 2 to 3 minutes, loop out of it, another you can go on forever. That's one of the reasons why black preaching, I mean, our people love to, they can sit there for hours, because first of all, it's an experience, but African-American tradition knows how to recharge and refire every 2 to 3 minutes. So it's a constant. You gotta have a whole new shift every 2 to 3 minutes.
I found it interesting because I went to Garland University Seminary, and we were not allowed to preach any other way except the narrative in our preaching class. And actually, Greg Craddock came to our class for us. And like I said, he was incredible, probably the best I've ever heard. And I remember other friends of mine who went to the seminary were looking down on that because he said, "What do you mean y'all do this about point preaching?" I'm like, "No, we're not." They told us, they fell us that we did. They wanted us to preach to speak to the common person.
Yeah.
And we had to preach there.
Yeah. That was But see, there's a narrative way of doing expository. There's a new expository preaching, which is what I'm suggesting. There's narrative for it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, it still was. I mean, it was still good the way they talked, but yeah. It wasn't like, okay, this part was burned and degree and all that stuff. You know? Although we could do that for classes, it wasn't.
Yeah.
You know?
The debate between inductive and deductive preaching has been basically an insider debate. Because in the one hand, you're moving from propositions, and the other hand, you're moving towards propositions. But the end result is the same. It's a proposition. What I'm saying is, it's not a proposition at all. You hear what I'm saying? And I have a whole new, it's how I call it transduction, not induction, not deduction, not abduction, but transduction. But you're giving people experience of an aerophore. It's an aerophoric experience. Yeah.
What we're working on now is how to engage the congregation in a conversation following this kind of preaching, which is what we're doing.
I don't want to do it following, but I want to be part of the preaching process.
Right, exactly.
That's a little different than saying a question-answer period afterwards.
No, it's not the question-answer. It's how do you engage the congregation and keep them in the conversation?
That's where we're moving. Exactly. Exactly right. Yeah.
I was tracking with your idea of image communicating narrative and metaphor in love and one love. I'm wondering where, because I grew up in a church, very big church, that did latch on to this this idea of communicating using images to communicate central.
But they're using images to communicate principles.
Oh, I see.
Do you know what I mean?
They would use images to communicate the story. But what I found very turned off, what I was very turned off by in the church was how very not propositional it was, but presentate. It was very slick and very like there was a lot of presentation involved in it and production, and like so the product value was very high, and so it seemed very distant to me.
Yeah.
How do you toe the line between finding those images, being creativity? Because I love the creative element, the dramatic element. How do you find the balance between that and then also genuine? I guess you would call it not put on. Is that too?
No. Exactly where we're headed. Okay. Exactly right. Because drama can either be the worst or the best.
Right.
Too much drama is the worst. Because it's all about presentation, not participation. I want to get, one more, yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to sort of marry the idea that people like Chakras from the college of there being one language that can talk, and it's always powerful changing that language. Creating one language is you want to sort of speak to that if there is a connection between the two.
Well, yeah, the neophoric language transcends all languages. I mean, that is a global, an emerging global language that we all share. Whatever you learn to speak linguistically, there is this kind of emerging global language that is universal. Anybody can see this story in whatever your language is and understand the message. So there is this kind of, and it's the language of the mind, the language of the mind for all of us. When we dream, we're dreaming in the elementary language, and it's all narrophoric. It's all narrative and metaphor. Words are getting in our way. And that's why I challenge you, whenever you are tempted to say word, replace it with story. In the beginning was the
story.
Thank you.
I got an email.
You got an email.
I thought it was a metaphor. Every story. So.
here's the problem. The story, the word was made. No, it was made more words. See, in the last 500 years, we just made the word more words. The worst, almost the worst translation for Logos is word. Logos really means sound, better sound, voice, better story than word. And that's how badly we mangled this incredible complex Greek concept of Logos. The authoritative
word,
story. Why isn't the authority in the story? See, we've been taught to trust the word. What if you were taught to, I'm trying to teach you to trust the story. So it's a very different. And we all are suffering from something that prevents us from this. And yeah.
You have to have a word before you can put out something like this.
No.
You need to describe. No. To be expression.
In linguistic philosophy, metaphors come before words. You have no word that is not built on a metaphor. Every single word that we come up with is based on a metaphor. All words come from metaphors. Metaphors come first.
But when you try to explain how to make this commercial, like, you need to be able to say it in words.
But we use words before to present propositions. I'm saying if you're using words, you use words to tell stories.
Yeah.
So I'm not against words, but the words are in service of the stories. Before, the words were in service of the principles and points and propositions. Now our words are in service of the narratives.
Yeah.
Which is a revolutionary shift.
But you cannot say only the narrative.
Well, yeah, they did only the narrative. You know, they did only the narrative. But we all are communicators, and we use. See, this is. I get in a lot of trouble because I require my divinity students at the end of the year to their final. I not require them a final paper. I require them a final project. See, papers are Gutenberg. That papers prepare you to communicate in words. I want my students to communicate on YouTube, in multimedia form, so they can present to me projects in any of five media forms. If they want to write a paper, they can. But for the rest of their life, I'm sorry, you're not going to be judged on how well you write a paper. And that's the problem. We think of sermons as writing papers, not telling stories. Yeah.
But we can throw images into that, but unless we use words, it's not real. I mean, that's what I'm hearing here, is that English. I'm not agreeing with that. I'm saying what you're saying is completely opposite, that image is a story.
Image is a story. You don't
have to have every time those words just with an image backing up what you're saying. So it's a completely different shift.
Right.
An image.
Yes, exactly.
One of the struggles that I know I face, and I'm not sure about the others in the room, but I'm not the preaching pastor, the teaching pastor. You know, they give me, you do music, so I have this to do music, and that's not the influence I have. The small groups have more influence, but yeah. You know, so it's good, but it's also frustrating. You know,
Yeah, but you need to help to stir the pot. Let me give you an image for this. There is no healing unless the waters are stirred up.
You don't need money.
Okay?
That's just Rachel.
No, when I do ordination sermons, I give everybody being ordained a stirring stick. There is no, you got it right there. There is no healing unless the waters are stirred up. Part of your job and mine is to stir up the water so that healing can, because our waters are stale right now. They're not being stirred up. Yeah.
Could you repeat what your five options were for the project by media?
Yeah, you got print, which is always there, but you got audio, video I include YouTube. You got software, and I include that, you know, I hate PowerPoint, I mean, but Prez is, I think, a better alternative. They give me a Prez, which includes sound and other things. Do you follow what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Okay. And what's the fifth one? Is that four? Audio, video, software, print. Yeah, they can write a computer program. Or game, that's fine for the game. And gaming is huge. Gaming is huge. The gaming industry, we got to learn to communicate in gaming form. Gaming is bigger than Hollywood. You know, we have billion-dollar movies that are huge. Most games now are selling a billion. I mean, the gaming industry is bigger than all of Hollywood and Bollywood put together. That's how huge the gaming business is. And we still orient towards Oscars. We ought to be giving awards to the games. We got to face gaming. Yeah, wait.
In this last year in high school, we were going to X, and their test over X was they had to, as a team, teach one of the chapters of the last seven in X. And it just dawned on me what we've been talking about. Half of the teams had YouTube videos to teach that chapter. But those chapters, they still talk about.
Yeah.
Exactly. They knew everything that went on then, but pause. And some of them were so hokey. These little dolls and all this.
Doesn't matter.
We were laughing the whole thing, but yeah. It was wonderful. They still remember those characters.
Yeah. What is an example of a game that you've been given as a project? I mean, has anybody ever done that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For example, one project was they went in World of Warcraft and did evangelism in World of Warcraft.
I had a kid in my youth group 8 years ago who did that. He became saved and he started witnessing to people and chatting to people all that.
There you go.
And he actually made his character the biblical magnet that he uses himself.
Yes.
And he did it.
You can open up the world in Second Life. Build a whole, yeah.
Okay, going back to the final project. Would you weigh in on whether she individually
I like team projects better. I encourage team projects. The problem I have is that my Asian students love team projects. My Western students shy away from it. Yeah. And I probably should just require a team project. I have not done that. I said, because my wife keeps telling me there's such thing as one audience too many. And I never know when I'm beyond that one audience, but I'm so odd to begin with. If I were to require a team project, I mean, the fact that I don't require a paper, but I require a project that can be done in any of these meeting forms immediately puts me on the fringes with other faculty. Other faculty look at this as beneath them. But, and I also don't teach, I organize learning. I also tell my students that the ultimate syllabus is them. I mean, so I'm really odd to begin with, so I don't know how far to press it, but if I could, I would. I would require a team project, because collaboration is the essence in the future. We call collaboration cheating, but collaboration is, I would encourage team projects. Yeah, anybody? Any comments? Yeah.
I think... For me, I'm tracking with you on the imagery and all that stuff. I guess looking at it as, you know, being in a creative community and working with people that are creative, one of my biggest fears or concerns is the idea of, like, going around and mining the creative community for talent that really smacks like 90s marketing. And my concern is like there's a lot of churches now that, okay, great, we want visuals. And I know we're talking on a level of like Marathon, and that's awesome, but kind of looking around and saying like, well, who can I get on my team now to, instead of doing it with them, kind of like do it for me, communicate this message, because I get it, like pictures are important, but now I want to like market my message. Yeah. And I think like we watch Super Bowl and it's great, like I love the story, I am emotionally moved, but my concern is like it is still marketing and I want to get past that.
Yeah.
Like, I want to get past the marketing element so that people know I'm inviting you. I want you to feel like we're doing this together. I know that one of the big words it uses with, like I love it. We're doing this with each other. So how does that happen? Like to me, that's kind of what's coming.
Well, let me, okay, yeah. And y'all wanted me to get further along than I am and faster than I am. So let me get to you really quick here. I want to give you an image for this culture, in many ways this seminar. All right? Okay, we got the operating system down. The operating system is what? MRI, M stands for? R stands for? I stands for? Okay. So whatever the culture is, that's gotta stay the same. Okay, that's the tradition, the anchor that we throw into the future. It's gotta be missional, relational, incarnation. But you hook the operating system up with a variety of different interfaces. The interface that has been working and will work up until 2030, I think. In 2030, this will change. Which means that many of you will serve the bulk of your ministry with another interface. So I can only get you to the next 15, 20 years. But it's I call it an EPIC interface, E-P-I-C. E stands for experiential. P stands for participatory. I stands for image rich. Or Derek's trying to bring me to incarnational, which is a better way of putting it. C stands for connection. But E-P-I-C, this is a culture very image dominant.
Right.
So this is what works. This will work with any operating system. If you want to communicate with this culture, you got to get epic. You got to get more experiential. This culture is not looking for something to believe in. Belief is not the problem in this culture. This culture is hungry for the rapture of experience of being alive. And they want worship to provide them with a God experience. Not God thoughts.
Amen.
Not God beliefs. And I would refine it further, an experience of a story. A God story. Some of you here from educational institutions, all Christian colleges say, we are going to send our kids out with a Christian worldview, and I want to puke. That's as stale as you can get. And that is not where this culture is. This culture, forget worldview, it's all about a life story. You hear the difference? The view, worldview, that's why Jesus died, to give you a worldview? No. This culture is desperate, hungry for a life story. How can I build my life, and what story do I build my life? Because you've got all these commercials saying, build it on our story, build it on our story. These are all stories. They want you to draw you in and say, build your identity on my story. No. We got the greatest story never told. Because we don't know it as a story. Because we all have versitis. Because we have accessed the Bible from an alien template. None of us here approach the Bible as a story. All of us here approach the Bible chapter and verse. Bible is not written in chapter and verse. John Calvin's first one to do it, all you reformed people. He did it first. sliced and diced it up, typical modern thing to do, take it apart. The Geneva Bible came out in chapter verse, and King James came on the scene and said, we're going to adopt that. And so we all have accessed the Bible in an alien format. And I'll prove it to you. This is how bad it is. I bet you all know John. Let's do John 3:16 together. We can recite it together in beautiful harmony. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. Well, let's do John 3:15. See what I mean?
Who was he talking to in the story?
See, we have extracted. We have been people who have extracted these principles, and we've made them medieval, pre-modern. Here's what we did: we had on our walls of our churches, beautiful mosaics, fabrics, paintings, images. Protestants came along. What they do to them? But you can't live without images. So what became our images? I grew up in a home, and guess what we had on our walls?
Words.
Bible verses. They were framed. They were in plaster Paris. We had three-dimensional Bible verses. We had the Ten Commandments. You can't live without it, but we made our images words. And that's where we're stuck. That's what we've got to break through. That's what we've got to break through. We've got to get rid of our versitis. We've got to start thinking the Bible as a story, as one story from Genesis to the maps. It's one story. And how do we learn to tell that one story? Now, experiential. We grew up with an interface, make it rational, logical, linear. We rewrote that verse. Intellectually comprehend and understand that the Lord is good. When actually the verse is taste and see. Experience the goodness of God. All right. The P stands for participatory. We grew up with a performance mode as an interface. So it's all about how do I provide a better performance. There is a new standard of excellence. It is not the quality of the performance, it's the quality of the participation. This is a massive shift. Now, let me just go all of them now. I'll go back to this P. Image. This culture communicates in images. It's word driven. We are it's image driven. We are word based. We learn how to exegete words. Not one of you was ever trained how to exegete an image. Not one of you was ever trained how to catch a story. If you gave me storytelling, you're first a story catcher. We'll stare a story in the face, not know it's a story. The C is connection. Epic. We were trained to be very individualistic. It's all about me. It's all about my needs. Where I am. What helps me. The apps for me. How to make my life better. The applications are all about how I can have something better in my own life. This culture is really hungry for connection. For relationship. I think the church, by and large, and the whole field of worship, has understood the shift towards more experiential modes. I think they've come to terms a little bit with the need for more use of images, although they're still done in a performance-based. We're still struggling with that connection, but the hardest trouble we're having is the people. Because we're stuck in a performance. Preaching, by and large, in all of our seminaries is taught as a performance art. That's the language for it. That's what it's called. Preaching is a performance art.
I know you come from a background where testimony was a part of sharing testimony, having a testimony service. And I think we need to find a way to add that with the participatory.
I agree. Story time. That's the one place where we can tell stories. and where the Spirit could work. And we need, but I would argue that the whole worship experience becomes story time. To reframe the whole worship as story time. But let me just give you an image from the page. Alright? When I was growing up, I went to concerts. I snuck out to go to concerts. I couldn't go to concerts, but I snuck out. Hey, Big Bucks. I come out of the holiness tradition. It was really strict. My mother was ordained in a pilgrim holiness church. I call that Marine Corps of Methodism. About as Amish as you can get. The women look just like Amish, except even some of the pilgrims wore the coffee filters. But so I snuck out to go to concerts. Paid big bucks. The bigger the ticket cost, the better seat you got. Okay? It was all about the seats. Now, you still pay big bucks today for a concert. But the only people in their seats are us. Because Alexander's not in the seat. He gets there early, not to sit in the seat, but to go where? To go up front. In the mosh pit. To get as close to the experience as it possibly can. And the highest and holiest moment of every concert. And this is why you pay the big bucks. Is when the performer does this. When I can get you to sing my song, and it becomes your song, our song, it's now a part. Those are Garth Brooks' exact words. When my song becomes your song, it's a party. This is why this culture goes to a concert, not to listen to somebody perform their music. So they can participate. This is an age of participation. It is a paradigm shift from this to this. The question is, how do we create worship that is more this than this? How do we, as preachers, create sermons that are more this? I'm in my fifth preaching style. I want you preachers to hear this. In the course of my lifetime, to bake fresh bread, I've had to change my preaching 5 times. And I'm experimenting with a sixth. The notion that you can go through your whole ministry with one preaching style? The notion that you can just do every Sunday one worship style? Okay. How do we shift from this to this, and what does it mean to move from performance-based to participation-based? Or I call it... This culture is a karaoke culture, and it's getting more karaoke. People will not, in this TGI culture, they will not feel that experience of worship has been their experience until they have the right, they feel, to in some way change the content of the experience. I just came back from South Africa. I was in a home. They hosted me for a night. And they brought me into the kitchen, and they said, write a message for us on our wall. I said, excuse me? They gave me a big, marker. I said, sign our wall, write us a message. And I looked around, and every guest who had stayed there had written on their kitchen wall. See, they just don't want a white wall. They want a wall that what? Tells the story of the people that stayed there. Last year I stayed at a home where they asked me to do that to their couch. I'd rather do the wall than the couch.
It's a lot harder than the couch.
In other words, your presence at something. Now, you don't have to feel like you always have to take the mic, but you got to feel like if I wanted to, I could. That my participation could actually shape the content of that experience. That I contribute to something that could actually change the content, not fill in the blank. You hear the difference? So I want you all, you know, I hate these, I'm sorry, but you come in and you get an outline and you fill in the, what am I, kindergarten? I fill in the blank of the words that are just the right words that you give me to write in my, this is grade school? No. That's not the kind of interaction I'm talking about, not kind of participation. We're talking about a participation that actually can change the content. I'm going to push you a little bit here. We're going to come back and talk about it for the rest of today and tomorrow. But the notion, I guarantee you 20 years from now, the notion, you preachers, that you're the only one that God gave a sermon to that week will go down as the height of arrogance. I mean, your whole congregation, you're the only one that God gave anything to say and communicate to that congregation that week. And your job is to keep them shut up so you can... See, that's representational. That's not participational. That's a representative mindset. I am paid to represent God for my people. And to my people. Yeah?
At the African-American tradition, all of these thoughts speaking about your...
It does. But I'm talking about participation that even goes beyond that. I mean, Ken Elmore and I have been this kind of having this conversation where I think he's the greatest preacher of America, much less, you know, he's African American, he's the greatest preacher by all. But it's gotta go beyond the call and response is still a little you know what to say. It's still too much fill in the blanks. There's gotta be a new call and response where your response shapes the next call. That's the out of controlness. That's where we really freak out about this. Yeah.
Just to be clear, like if they will be, I know a lot of churches that I work with, you know, they allow their students, young college students, mostly young, to use their social media to text questions while the pastor preaching. Like I didn't understand what you just said, or could you explain it more? He is the text and explain to me. Text.
Yeah, I do it. I don't want. I've hesitated to tell you this, but we're coming to life, so let me just give you this now. Yeah, let me give you an image for it. Now, this is my favorite way of preaching. This does not mean that this is anything that anybody ought to emulate here. Okay. Okay. If it's Jesus, you go sit at his feet and you do likewise. If it's anybody else, you go sit at their feet and do otherwise. All right. So I'm going to tell you how I like to preach, my favorite way of preaching, but I'm not saying that any of you do this. Okay? You with me? Is that understood? So I'm not telling you to do this. Okay? I'm not in the franchise. You got to figure out what fits in your zip code. You with me? So I'm not going to tell you unless I get agreement here.
Yes.
All right. So, okay. So I'm not saying you preach like this, but I'm in the middle of the congregation. There are three screens, each with a different feed. And what I like to do is I like to build the sermon together with the congregation. It's very interactive. We got images. I'm drawing out their stories, so it's a lot of story time. But the middle screen is me interacting with the people. People need to see you on the screen. This is hard. This is the hardest thing in the world for me to do. If I could do my ministry over again, I'd start with this. Because I didn't come to this till late. And how I came to it, I was with a couple thousand Lutheran youth workers. And I was trying this. I was in the middle of the congregation. I was interacting with them, and it wasn't going well. And it was like I was, you know, just slogging and slushing, and it was just work, and it wasn't play. It was hard. And Jesus gave us the sacrament of failure, you know? So I almost started shuffling my feet. And but then somebody said, "Sweet, don't you have this on video?" And I, by the way, nobody else heard this but me. I do believe in angels. So I said, "Did you hear that person who yelled out at me?" Nobody yelled out at angels. Anyway, so I do. I just put this together on a video. So I'm still thinking Gutenberg. Okay, I came 2,000 miles so I could come here and sit down and have you listen to the exact same thing I'm saying now, except I'm up on a video. But I trusted that voice. So I said, you know, I've got a video for this. Why don't I just put this on a video? Here, put this up there on the screen. I sat down, the place darkened, they watched me up the screen say the exact same thing I was saying. When it was done, I turned on the lights. It was a totally different congregation. Now I couldn't do anything wrong. I was sinking. It was just incredible exhilaration. And I said to somebody afterwards, "Do you notice the difference?" They said, "Oh yeah, night and day." I said, "How do you explain it? There was nothing different." I was saying to them personally as I looked up on the screen. They said, "Yeah, but like, you didn't have any authority until they saw you up on the screen." I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "Well, they didn't know that you could speak their language." I said, "What are you talking about?" They said, "Well, their language is a screen language. It's not a book language. They only knew you through your books. It's not a page language anymore. It's a screen language. Until they could see you on a screen and see you communicate in their language, you did not have authority then. And once they saw that you could do it, you could speak the screen language, they were with you for the rest of the time. They need to see you on that screen. And those of you that know what I'm talking about, you can be up there on stage, you can be 10 feet away from somebody, what are they looking at? You're going, I'm here. And they're looking where? At the screen. They need to see you on that screen. Second screen, a VJ. I have a live VJ, and everything I say is being put up in image form, real time, no preparation, and preferably a 13-year-old's doing it. Because they're the ones that are quickest. I call this person my VJ, my dancing partner. But I'm, you know, the old Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers. But my dancing partner is working harder than I am. You know what they said about Ginger Rogers? She did everything Fred Astaire did except backwards and high heels and a flowing skirt. And they have no idea where I'm going to go, but everything, by the way, this is what my students do when I lecture anyways. Everything I say, what are they doing? They're on Google putting it in image form. If I talk about Morehouse College, they got Morehouse College up on the screen. Talk about Martin Luther King, I got a picture of King, I got multiple images. So everything that I say, I talk about. If I use Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers, they got Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers. Then you would like this. It's ragged, it's jerky, there are risks. You want to hear some of my risk stories? and you know what I'm doing. Some things that can happen. Okay. And it may be good to have a filter. Depends on how easily offended your congregation is. I mean, the Bible says that they who trust in the Lord are not easily offended. That's Solomon, what is it? Which Solomon is it? And why Christians are some of the most easily offended people? As if my poor VJ was trying to get up. I mean, sorry. The internet has everything, but so you can see some images that might, but see, this is authentic, it's real. Yeah. I mean, the biggest one is I had Laura Schlesinger. Now, who would ever think I had trouble with Laura Schlesinger? Okay, you know what I mean? I'm talking about when culture has a relationship with ministers, but the church doesn't. So we got Eric Phil, who's a relationship minister. We got Oprah, who's the high priestess of relationships. Okay, the whole lot of time I'm talking, they're putting up, my DJ's putting up images. All right, well, now we got my favorite relationship minister, Delilah. I live in the Pacific Northwest, and she's in the radio community. We know what I'm talking about. She's up from 2 to 5 in the morning. Queen of Sappy love songs, you know. God always gives you a warning, though. So the images for Delilah. So, but they were paintings. So the church can handle paintings, okay? But then I go, oh, and then there's Laura, Dr. Laura, Laura Schlesinger. I don't want to forget about Laura. And then the whole place goes, because Laura, unbeknownst to me, you know, Google image searches, whatever. She had a boyfriend when she was in her 20s. Took some pictures of her. He tried to bribe her, and she refused to pay, so he flooded the market. I had no idea what was going on. So, there, the first image of Laura Schlesinger was her in the buff standing under a door jamb, you know. And I'm staring you now, aren't I? Yeah. It even got worse because my VJ froze. She was a 15-year-old kid and she didn't want to do that. So I had to go down and help her. Best thing ever. I mean, until this day, people are still talking about it. Oh, remember that picture of Laura Schlesinger? Do you remember what I was talking about? Upstairs. So you got a live DJ, constantly new images, fresh images up there. Third, future worship is going to be webcast. If it isn't webcast now, it will be. You want people who aren't there to participate as well. So you have a live Twitter feed. A live Twitter feed. Or a text. So everything that they text and tweet, here's where we are. You come into church today and see a whole row of kids with their yellow pads taking notes, and the church, the whole church says, what great kids we have. Look how serious they are. Well, good luck with the yellow pads. You got a whole row of kids doing this, and the church goes, why can't they leave their place at home? What right do they have to be in here? I'm sorry, this is the equivalent of this.
Yeah.
And what I want is I want kids, turn on your cell phone. Not turn them off. Turn them on. Turn on your iPads. And let me give you the hashtag. And I want you to take notes. I want you to text. But I want it right up here. And so what they text, what they, the notes that they need, is right up on the screen. And you're seeing it in real time. So you don't get privately, I have no idea what you're talking about, you get right up on the screen. But see, in it, wait a minute, but this, you say, well, that's embarrassing. No, no, no. You have just now authenticated yourself because you're real enough to take that. See? It's not, you've now not just diminished it. In the Google world, I've just diminished myself. No, you haven't. You just increased your authority with that congregation, especially those kids, because you... You're strong enough to say, you know, bring it on. Bring it on. And I've actually had, I have no idea what Sweet's talking about right now. And I go, okay, I must be going too fast. Let me try again. So I loop back and I say, whoever texted that, I want you to tell me if I'm doing better this time. Okay? Now is it just honored it? So there's real-time feedback. It's not feedback 20 minutes later. Real-time feedback. Okay, remember, go thou and do otherwise. But I want you to see, this is the kind of high risk, high
reward.
Notice. You, and let me end with this. You say to a Gutenberger, come to worship, anything can happen and probably will. They get the heebie-jeebies. You say to TGIFer, come to worship anything you have, probably will, and it's catnip. It's catnip. Okay, time for lunch. We'll come back.